Well,
okay.
I guess there's no... We know who that is.
Here comes Naughty Holder, and he's horny.
Oh, he wants your daughters.
Now, this is later period Slade,
this
AD.
This is late model Slade. Absolutely. It's 1985, man.
So, this is after Keep Your Hands Off My Power Supply.
Yeah, yeah. This is from Rogues. This is a Rogues Gallery album.
I love this song. I've heard this song before. I've not heard this whole album, though.
This is a good record.
Yeah?
It's a good, solid Slade album. It's got, you know, it's got a cheesy number here and there, but
yeah.
That wouldn't be a Slade album without one. So,
especially later period.
Yeah, they're rocking, man. I mean, it's good songs. As a matter of fact, there's something weird about this song. This song was originally released on an album in the UK in 81.
Oh.
And was a hit. So they included it on this, the CBS version of the U.S. album in 85, 4 years later.
Is it the same recording or is it re-recorded?
I wouldn't know that.
But, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that surprised me because I knew this song. Like, they played this at that, was it Reading Festival where it was their big comeback or something?
Yeah, yeah.
And this was one of those tracks they were playing. So clearly it predates the My Oh My, yeah. The Run Runaway, 1983.
I mean, 85 Slade, man. Listen, this record charted, this album charted in 8 countries.
Nice.
Including the U.S. It was like number 132 or whatever. But
well, that's
hey,
about as good as any of the other ones did.
Yeah, I think Run Runaway might have been their biggest American hit.
It was, yeah.
Right?
They actually had a video for it on MTV or whatever.
Yeah, so Rogues Gallery. You know what? This is a good record. I would highly recommend Don't Poo-Poo Slade because it's 85.
I may have to borrow this from you.
Yeah, absolutely.
A little Rogues Gallery action. All right,
yes,
well,
indeed.
Shall we get cracking?
Let's crack.
Release the Kraken!
Hey, this is Don Airey from Deep Purple. You're listening to the Shabby Road Record Show podcast. Yes, you are. Cheers, mate. Keep rocking on.
Well, hey, Lama!
Hey, Lama!
Hey, Lama!
The Shabby Road Record Show is on the air, your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and now, this kid really knows his onions. Sure, he may be on a toot from homemade panther piss, but he's going to get this rub started, and that sounds berries to me. A.D. Adams!
I don't even know what you said, but I like that. I'm that guy. Well, hello once again from the god-awful Sunny Slope, Arizona's Phoenix's not-so-nice district. But as always, we brave the flying bullets, junky needles that make this neighborhood so damn charming, so that we may invite you to yet another record-spinning party down here in the swampy sphincter of Sunny Slope. Shabby Road Studio. How you doing, Ryan? How goes it, buddy?
Very, very nice, man. I'm doing great. Glad to be here. Excited to get these records going. I got an amazing mystery box, and I'm sure you do as well.
I've got a pretty cool little box, man.
Yeah?
I do, I think.
Well, let's give a shout-out to our buddy Liz Morgan, who's over there running the controls
Liz,
once again.
Hi over there. I can barely see. I see you. We play peekaboo around the corner here.
I see that.
Yeah.
She is at the helm once again tonight, and she's brought with her Sally 5000. What's up, Sal?
Hello. Back for more fun, are we?
Oh, she's kind of in the sexy mode tonight, I see.
She's a bit randy, is she not?
I think week after week, she's a little randy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so welcome.
Next week, she's going to be a little Jermaine. Week after that, she's going to be a little Tito. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Maybe later, Janet.
Yeah. Ooh.
If we play our cards
that
right.
Would be good.
Yeah. All right. Well, we also have a friend, Grass Daddy, hanging out with us. What's up, brother? Great to see you again, as always. Hanging out back there, sipping on a Budweiser, just chilling back. And if you want to get a can koozie for your Budweiser, visit nameonanything.com, AD.
Nameonanything.com. You know what, Ryan? Let's say you're a mad scientist and you're creating a living, breathing love zombie from various old and assorted body parts. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Who's to say I'm not?
Hey, some parts are more important than others, obviously. I mean, dude, a spleen's a spleen, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you got to have proper boobies. They're very important. But also... So is the brain. Sometimes it's hard to look at two brains and tell which is the normal one, if you know what I mean, right?
Oh.
Well, the guys on nameonanything.com have solved that problem for you crazy geniuses. Personalized formaldehyde jars marked for each and every type of brain your hunchbacked assistant can dig up. Yep, jars personalized and pre-labeled normal or nymphomaniac or ex-wife. Hey, you got to be careful. You never know where old Igor's been digging. Formaldehyde brain storage unit jars. Clearly marked for your convenience and their safety. Nameonanything.com.
And you'll save 10% if you mention Shabby Road Wreckage Show when you put your order together over there. A fantastic group of people over there working hard for you at nameonanything.com. Go over there today and start ordering your formaldehyde jars labeled just like AD said.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Oh, good. Valid question, AD.
That's fair.
What's your answer?
I don't know.
Well, he doesn't have a brain to even answer that question.
I would while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain.
Well played.
Thank you.
If I only had a brain. All right. Well, how's that mystery box looking? Break it down for me.
Crazy, crazy little box of mine. Crazy little box of mine. Two out of the three making their Shabby Road Record Show debuts here. One, I've got a track from an underground multiracial party band from L.A., 1986.
Okay, I got a guess, but I don't
know.
Cool
record.
Never known you to listen to the band I think it is.
Well, is this something
out of your wheelhouse?
Yeah, a little bit, and I bought it for the cover, and it's one of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Really cool. I just held it up and went, why is this making me buy it? And I'll get into that when I take my spin, when I open my box and let all that hell and fury out. Yeah. I've got another pick. It's a hard rock / heavy metal / stoner rock. I don't care what you call it. This shit rocks balls. From Berlin, Germany, 2013. You will listen or you will die.
It's from Berlin, Germany.
Oh, it is.
Oh, sweet. That sounds wonderful. I love it over there.
I will get my towel.
2013. Are they young?
I think so. Yeah, young and pink.
I'm putting on my short shorts and my combat boots.
Oh, you're wearing shorts. That's so crazy.
Short shorts for you.
And I've got in my box. Ooh.
I miss our effeminate Germans. We haven't had them on the show for a while.
We'll have plenty of opportunity during a segment later.
Oh, I love it.
And I've also got some garage rock from Boston, 1968.
Whoa.
I'm going to call this a wolf in sheep's clothing, Ryan. It's very happy sounding, but very lyrically dark. Flower power / grunge era from the Mott collection. Also, we will play a round of Name the Time Signature at the intro of this record. So,
I love it.
It'll be fun. It's a good little thing, and I think you're going to dig it. It's pretty great little record. It's really, really good. So,
nice.
Yeah, I'm excited. What do you got in your box there, buddy?
Well, I've got a very interesting theme going in my box. It's kind of all over the place. It's going to be a very small time frame, really 69 to 73, I think, is, yeah, 69 to 73. So I'm going old school tonight. And I'll tell you a little more after we give a shout out to Sister Cindy, who's dropped by the website. ShabbyRoadRecordShow.com is the website. Cindy bought us some beer to drink tonight. So let's give it up for her. She is also a candidate for the Enabler Award, of course, this year.
Oh, man, it's a racehorse.
She bought us 18.
Horse race. It's a racehorse. See?
It's a racehorse.
I need a beer.
Somebody get
it's
him
a one. Horse race.
So it's a horse of a different color.
Oh, that's a horse of a different color.
So Cindy dropped by the website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, saw that tall, frosty mug of beer, and clicked on the little drop-down box there. There were 18 beers that she ordered, and it's pumped right into the fridge via the magic of the internet.
If you mean fridge, you mean my gullet? Yes.
Yes. Yeah, pumped right into 80's liver.
Yes.
All right, so my box, I call it the Smart People Factory. It's these bands that are somewhat intellectual, artsy-fartsy, but it's not what you think. It's not like we're going to hear a bunch of guys like this and sing like that.
No,
because it's all old school stuff. And a classic band from 1973. No stranger to the Shabby Road Record Show, but I got some great stories that I dug up on it. And I'm going to talk a little bit more. I don't want to give too much away, but there is a reason why I brought them here tonight, because they have a new record out, and I wanted to juxtapose a classic record with the new record. And then I'm going to another well, kind of a genius, a wunderkind,
oh, thanks.
If you will.
Thanks.
I'm not talking about you, buddy.
Oh.
Not this time.
Oh.
You're a wunderkind of a different color.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's going to throw down a little rock and roll for us here from 1971. And then finally, we got to go back to New York City and do some another bunch of smart people. Well-educated and but really pioneers in their genre of music and just great stuff, full of more great stories. New band. They have not been on this show before, surprisingly. But
well, this is
going to
be great because you got smart people music and I got really dumb stuff,
ooh,
which is great.
We're matching wits.
Right? It's going to be street smarts versus book smarts.
Should we do higher IQ?
Yeah.
We'll pick a guy from each of my bands.
We should
versus...
do like, yeah, who do you want to be in your band? We'll do each at the end of each round. Which, okay? Like smart band or like street smart band?
Yeah, okay. Right? I like it.
Street or book?
All right. Well, Liz has the two playing cards. We're going to decide who's going first here. 80's on the red side. I'm on the black side. Liz has a red and a black card. And our buddy Dan, Crash Daddy over there, will select which one, left or right. He is pointed to Liz's right hand, and she reveals...
Black.
An ace of spades.
Oh, dude, you are on a roll again. You have gone first many, many times out of very not many more times.
Historically, historically, AD, you have been the one that goes first probably, you think you're like 10 or 11 episodes ahead of me.
Yeah, I think.
But I'm catching up over recent months, obviously.
Yeah, it's been 6 out of 7 or 7 out of 8 or something like that.
Okay, I had mentioned my first pick here that the... reason why I brought this particular record is this this group, this act, this man, they have just released a brand new record, and I listened to it today, and I'm a fan of the original band, I'm a fan of the producer, and they're all together again on the new record, but I missed something. There's something missing in this new record. I miss the pageantry. I miss the grandeur.
Yeah.
I miss all of that because... the new Alice Cooper record just doesn't have it, really.
Oh,
but this record does. And for the first time on the show, we've played so much Alice Cooper, but we've not brought Billion Dollar Babies.
Oh, I thought you were going to pull the new record out. Well, that's just as good.
Yeah, I would say
that.
Billion
that's
Dollar Babies
classic.
Is better.
Classic.
So that's, of course, the snakeskin wallet.
You
Billion
betcha.
Dollar Babies. I am missing one of the accoutrements.
Do you have the dollar bill's not there?
I don't have the dollar bill in here.
Oh, man. It comes in a money clip.
Yeah, but I got the, the inside there. We got the cool picture.
The thing
picture
is, they made it such a cool poster, you had to take it out and hang it in your wall.
Yeah, so it's missing a few things, but the record's in good shape, and, you know, I've had it forever. I'm still looking for a complete collection, so I'll
classic
hand this over
Cooper
to you.
Oh, I'll go look at
do
it.
Do you have all the things inside of your...
I do.
You have all the accoutrements in there,
yeah.
The poster, the money?
Well, I didn't on my original one, but then... Mott had one in the Mott collection,
of course,
with all the
pristine
stuff totally intact. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So,
but my original one though was signed by had Michael Bruce sign it.
Really?
Yeah.
All
which
right.
Is cool. So,
San Francisco music impresario Bill Graham said, "If this band makes it, it's the end of everything we tried to create in the '60s."
Thank God.
And thank God for that.
Thank God for that.
Now, so one of the things I saw, too, you know who liked this record?
A.D. Adams.
A.D. Adams, of course, and
yes.
Mott and Ryan McKay when he first heard it. You know, my thing about this record, because I obviously discovered it a lot later, it was in a stack of records that my Uncle Dennis gave me. I've told this story on the podcast before, but my Uncle Denny gave me a stack of Alice Cooper records, and this was one of them that was in it. I made a cassette copies of all of them. But what really struck me later on, I go back, and I'm such a fan of Bob Ezrin and also Kiss's Destroyer album. If you're a fan of Destroyer and you've not heard Billion Dollar Babies...
Oh, come on, right?
You need
yeah.
to listen to
yeah.
that record. I mean, Kiss fans are still a little bit divided on Destroyer, but like for me, Destroyer was such a great, great record.
Like it or not, Beth or no Beth, I mean, it's the... And
it's thematic.
Great Expectations, it is. It's like a soundtrack as much as anything else.
Agreed.
The dynamics and the instrumentation is daring, and it's, you know, for a rock, quote-unquote rock, not even a pop band,
yeah.
a rock band to do that. That's
right.
A really bold statement. It's a bold move, and who does it better than Bob freaking Ezrin?
That's
right?
Agreed here. So I would put these two records together as sort of sister albums. They are very similar.
It's very fair, yeah.
Even though this one's a few years earlier, but man, such a good record.
Hey, Bob.
Guess who else?
Me, Gene. Hey, can we make us a Billion Dollar Babies?
Yeah, that's basically what they would probably ask. I remember the story is that Bob Ezrin ran into Kiss. He had been told by a fan in Toronto that Kiss is great and he needs to work with Kiss. And he bumped into them at a Toronto concert, and they're like, Kiss is coming down the stairs and Bob is going up the stairs. And he stops them in the stairwell and says, hey, are you guys happy with your records? And they looked at him and were like, well, of course we're happy with. Well, if you're not, let me know, because I'd be interested in working with you. I'm Bob Ezrin.
Bob fucking Ezrin.
And, of course, a month later, Phil LaCoin's office calls Bob Ezrin's office, and it's on, and Destroyer's on. So
make us a Billion Dollar Baby.
And it was a good record, the Destroyer, but, and you know, obviously Alice Cooper stuff is all nearly all Bob Ezrin in the 70s, save for the first two, and Muscle Love is not, but going in with varying degrees of success towards the end. But you know who loved this album, Billion Dollar Babies, is the one Bobby Christgau.
Oh, he did?
He did.
Wow.
In his normal backhanded douchey way, he writes in the Village Voice, yes, this is Alice's most consistent album, but only brilliance justifies such out front exploitation. And there's simply no schools out on this record. B plus.
Well, I mean, listen, I mean, schools out is an anthem that is
for
still,
the ages. Yeah.
How are you going to top that? I mean, come on, Robert.
Right. Yeah,
exactly. Hello, hooray. That's how you open through.
That's what I'm playing.
Oh.
Because let's talk about the new record. The new record, it's called, is it Paranormal? Is the new Alice Cooper record just came out, I believe, this month or in late July. And it's a good record. It's solid. It's got all the original surviving Alice Cooper, Michael Bruce is on it.
Dennis
Dunaway, Neil Smith are all on it for a couple songs. Not on the whole thing.
I think two or three.
Two or three. And I remember when I was hanging with Michael Bruce earlier this year, he was talking about, there's a song, Rat, something about rats.
Rats in my room.
Rats in my room.
I am bothered by the rats in my room.
Yeah, Michael was talking about that. I think he co-wrote that.
I'm
going
to get some cats in my room.
And the problem with the record, it's just missing those Ezrin-y, that grandeur that this album has. And we're going to drop the needle on Hello, Hooray. It feels like something, like there's pageantry.
Well, something is about to happen.
Right.
And they're telling you. Well, back in the day, because I saw them live, I saw every time they came live to either Baltimore or D.C., I would see them. And if they played in Baltimore and D.C., I would see them in Baltimore and D.C.
Nice.
And when this tour came around, this Billion Dollar Babies
tour. Their biggest tour.
Oh, my God, dude. And I'm like literally front row. Literally front row. And they didn't do a lot of barricade, was 10 feet from the stage. You know, I reached over and touched Alice's knee high.
Oh, it was on this tour?
Fucking thigh high, fucking leopard boots, right?
Yeah.
And, but they opened the show with Hello, Hooray. And the whole arena goes dark, and they got every Super Trooper spotlight aimed at this 4-foot mirror ball hanging from the middle of the arena, and stars are going everywhere, and they start, all of a sudden that's happening, and then they start with the Hello, Hooray, you know, the opening salvo of that, and you're just going, come on.
They are going
teenage mind blown.
Yeah, and this song actually is a cover song. It was written by Canadian Rolf Kempf and was originally recorded badly by Judy Collins. Have you ever heard Judy Collins' version?
I had no idea.
It's unlistenable.
Sort of her Diamonds and Rust, if you will.
I guess.
Joan Baez wrote
I imagine if there's a bunch of Judy Collins fans listening, which I'm not sure why they're listening to Shabby
Road.
I guess it's maybe good by her standards, but if you listen, I know this song from way back when, and it's so powerful and big and grand.
Oh my God.
And there's none of that in the Judy Collins version. I don't know what's happening in that version.
Probably.
But
fight with Joni Mitchell.
Exactly. One quick story, we'll drop the needle on this. Going back to our Kiss reference thing, I was listening to, or reading rather, an interview with Neil Smith, drummer Neil Smith. And he tells his story about Gene Simmons, Paul Stanley, Ace Frehley right when they got together as Kiss, went to go see Alice Cooper. And they got backstage. They showed up after soundcheck before the show. So after the soundcheck, Gene, Ace, and Paul snuck onto the stage.
Molary and Curly.
Yeah, no kidding. How drunk was Ace?
Oh, my God. Hey, it's going to be great. We're going to meet Alice.
Come on, Gene. Let's get up there.
Hey, your dragon boots are making too much noise. Yeah. Shh, keep it down.
So, quote, this is Neil Smith talking, quote, Gene said he saw the band at the Fillmore after soundcheck, and he got backstage where my drum set was still being set up. It was my chrome set, and each of them took turns. Gene, Ace, and Paul each sitting behind the kit and imitating my long over the cymbal stretch. You know how Neil Smith had those just octopus arms, man. I said, hey, motherfucker, no one sits by my kit. You got that? How dare you sit near my kit? I'll kick your fucking ass. To Gene Simmons.
Right on.
And Gene looks at him and goes, oh, God, what? I'm so sorry, man. And I said, ah, I'm just kidding, man.
But Neil had a fucking knife in his boot, though. He would have taken Gene
out. He would have taken
Gene
down. Yeah. Yeah, both Gene and Paul easily. Ace, he probably would have had a beer with.
The Alice Cooper Band, they were actual tough guys.
Yeah.
So let that be known.
So, all right, let's wrap the needle on it and imagine a young A.D. Adams.
Oh,
the house lights
God.
Have gone off, and here comes the Alice Cooper concert.
I can smell the weed in the Baltimore Civic Center right now.
Hello, hooray, from Billion Dollar Babies, Warner Brothers, 1973, the original Alice Cooper Band.
Yeah.
Oh, so I just feel great when I listen to
that.
Why
don't we just listen to the rest of the record?
One of our favorites.
Listen, we got time.
Good choice.
We got time.
So good. Hello, Hooray. Billion Dollar Babies is the record.
That's the way to start an album.
And I mentioned my box tonight is Smart People Factory. I find the original Alice Cooper group and Bob Ezrin and even Shep Gordon, throw him in there, as very bright, intellectual people that have such a knowledge of like old showbiz and put things together in such a unique and very, very cool way. These records still hold up. They're as fresh today as they were in 1973.
And it had not been done before. So they did not have a template to build on. There was no model before them.
Right.
And so even more so props to them. They included Houdini in their live act. They included all kinds of, you know, showbiz-y. Everything from cabaret and vaudeville.
Yep.
So, to Castle, the black and white Castle films, the horror films of the 50s and the late 40s and stuff.
And, of course, tried to shock you by singing about necrophilia.
Sure, dead babies.
And dead babies and the like. Absolutely, yeah. It's just a great combination, but it's still rooted in like vaudeville and
just love medicine character. Shows. The character had been so developed by then, and you love him.
Yes.
You love the evil bastard.
I love him on record. He's a passionate singer on that. I mean, is he freaking Pavarotti? Of course not. But
it's Alice Cooper. I'll take that all day long.
Coop, man. Yep. All right, AD, what you got?
All right, man. Well, listen, I found this fun little record on an end cap at the Camelback and 19th Avenue Zia's. Strictly bought it for the cover. No idea who it was. And when I do that, I don't often Google. I could Google and go, what do I have here?
You have a gift. I suck at this.
But yeah, well, it takes the fun out of it, right? You know, and if it's not expensive, then I'll go, all right.
Worth a shot.
Yeah, sure. Why not? My rule is basically I'll spend $6 maybe on a record unless it's really going to take me home. Then I'll spend more. This, I think, was, $6.
Okay. Right at the precipice.
Yeah. And it's an EP. It's not a full album. But the cover had me, and it was just something compelling about it. First thing I noticed was the cover itself, which I thought was fantastic. I'll just go ahead and pull it out, because I don't know if you've heard of them or not. I brought the Untouchables.
Oh, I do not know them.
Dude, look at that album cover.
I was wondering if you had Fishbone or something.
Well, it's funny you say that, because that is sort of the style. They were sort of the predecessor to Fishbone. Fishbone kind of took a chunk out of their pie, as did a lot of the Southern California sort of punk/ska type bands. Mm-hmm. Chili Peppers had already been kind of doing their thing on the college circuit. And that's kind of what this is all about, is the whole college frat party circuit where these crazy ass bands were just killing it. Couldn't sell a record, though. Couldn't get signed.
I know the feeling.
But we're at all the main events world. I mean, like, okay, this band's from California, but they're at spring break in Florida playing, you know, because it was all about the colleges and the parties and all that. So that's the kind of circuit they were on. What, no doubt, even in the 90s. I think they did Might As Well Be Walking on the Sun.
Everybody did that in the 90s.
But so, I mean, you know, they took a their ideas from this. So, but this band had more soul, I think. So what made me buy the record is, again, look at the cover. Describe that cover. It's just rocking.
One dude with a Telecaster kicking his right leg up. He's facing you, but his Telecaster is slung off to the side. His right leg is in a full David Lee Roth style kick, and he's wearing a nice black Blues Brothers type suit and a fedora and sunglasses.
But also, at the same time, doesn't it look like sort of the old detective magazine style?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Type cover, you know?
Yeah, and there seems to be a sort of a Japanese bent in it, so there's Japanese writing on it
as well. Something grabbed me and I went, that looks cool. So I flipped it over and I noticed a familiar song title right away, which, of course, I love the song no matter what.
I'm Not Your Stepping Stone.
Absolutely.
Monkey's Tune.
Right?
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, that's a point in the favor, right?
That's in
the win column. But there were a few things that almost shut down the whole deal. Okay. Mm. One is that the first track was produced by
David Waz.
And Don was.
Don was, yeah. Don okay? David was, yeah.
Now, they're obviously they're not brothers. They're stage brothers. They both adopted the name, of course. David was, his real name is David J. Weiss. And Don was, of course, who produced many, 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 many hits.
He was hot in the 80s.
And I did not like his sound. So, but his real name is Don Edward Fagenson. But I was not a fan, so I went, ah, fuck. Another thing I'm not a big fan of is when you see an album and it says Special London Mix or Freak Out Mix under the title of the song. I generally think to myself, okay, this is it implies cut and paste job in the studio,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's more of a producer's project. And yeah. less of a band. Does that make sense?
I'm totally
Anybody
with
you. Who's been in a recording studio before, if you made records out there or done recording, you know what I'm talking about. So that turns me off immediately. I mean, I'm thinking again, you know, cut and paste, totally quantized, compressed and tight and no dynamics, just strictly made for the dance floor and the editing.
Plus, this one's looking a little 80s. I mean,
it is. Well,
even the old Detective cover, it feels 80s.
This is 1986. But again, now let's talk plus column again. Stiff Records. Mm. And I'm going, okay.
Oh, yeah.
So that's when I went, I'm buying this fucker. All right. So one thing I noticed right away when I turned it on, the first track, it's almost kind of, man, how do I put it? It's almost like old, and I'm talking first album, Run DMC.
Oh, okay.
With big guitars, real guitars, I should say.
Uh-huh.
Real drums, real bass, and that's what this band is about. It's got that old school feel of early rap. But it's got that rock and roll guitar. So it's basically a bass.
A King of Rock album.
Yeah, like a guitar, bass, drums based album with a
great
lot
record.
Of vocals. Dude, right? So is it dancey? Yes. Is it in that? Is it dangerously close to that genre I don't like? Yes. But also, it's got a little bit of that old Grandmaster Flash and the Furious vibe to it, which I fucking love, the old New York, big city of dreams and all that,
mm-hmm.
which is great. But at the same time, it's got a hint of soul and that type of sound that was more, I think, mature that Prince was doing at the time, bands like that, from you know. So it's still
early Prince?
Early Prince,
okay.
But still guitar-laced, you know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
These guys are a little more guitar-y, though, which I totally dig. So there's something about it. And by all standards, I shouldn't like this record. But there's something about it that is really compelling. But I think, bands like B-52s, like when they first started, I mean, they ended up with hits.
Yeah.
But really, for a while, they didn't. I mean, Rock mm-hmm. Lobster hit big, but they were still doing the college and large bar circuits, you know? So there was a whole slew of bands doing this. Well, labels like Stiff Records were picking up bands like this and go, yeah, we'll squeeze a record or two out of them, see what we can get.
Yeah.
Well, this band ended up putting out quite a few. Didn't sell a shit ton of records, but it kept them on the road for quite a while. And they built up a big cult following. I'd never heard of them. The Untouchables, the UTs, as they're called. But, dude, there's something about this record that has got so much fucking attitude and fire and spit and college boy, I don't know what, on it. It's a fun record. It's just a very
cool.
fun record. It's got that.
I'm
urban,
curious.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean,
shape.
Dude, yeah, you can almost smell the beer in the freshman hurl.
Freshman hurl.
Yeah. So listen, all you drunken co-eds out there, if you feel like planning on busting them titties out, now's the time.
Okay.
All right. So here's...
Okay, Crash Daddy, bust out them titties.
Oh, my God. No. Something's gone horribly wrong. But this is... I'm going to play... Stepping Stone. It's the reason I bought the record. So this is a ruckus version of Stepping Stone.
Okay.
That's just killing it. Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart classic. Here's Los Angeles, California's The Untouchables from Stiff Records, 1986. This is the Dance Party EP.
Trying to make your mark in society. You're using
That crowd.
That is a madhouse in there.
Dude.
It's sweaty and it's everybody's drunk.
You can hear the crowd playing, partying when the band's playing, man. Yeah, right? I mean, it's...
Sally likes it.
That's a great record. And that's the Untouchables. The UTs from Los Angeles, that's from their Dance Party EP, Stiff Records, 1986. Real quick...
Drummer is the star of the show, by the way.
Oh, the drummer's killing it, man. Yeah. But the thing is, it's just so raw. And the rest of the EP is not like this. There's parts of it that are.
Okay.
But it's just so diverse and it's so cool. And it hits a lot of real cool, you know, early rap, early ska roots and things like that that became later, I think, pretty terrible music. You know, sadly. Now, these guys are just rocking. You can, beer cups are being thrown and everything smells like sweat and beer and like horny co-eds. So you can smell this record, actually, in the best of ways. And I mean that with love in my heart.
I enjoy it.
The UTs, man. I'm a fan.
Yeah. Good stuff.
I'm in. I'm a UT fan. The Untouchables. What you got, Ryan?
All right. Well, my smart people factory here, my little box is a smart people factory churning out one intelligent person after the next. Oh, weren't we supposed to do something?
Oh, yeah.
What were we doing?
Something smart, street smarts against book smarts.
So,
which party would you like to go? Which guy would you like to have in your band? Which party would you like to hang at? How about that? I just kind of made that one up.
I like that one. Okay, so the Alice Cooper concert with Hello Hooray starting.
Ooh.
Or that co-ed party at the Untouchables concert.
I've been at both.
Wow.
They're both kick ass.
That's a tough. That may be a draw.
Yeah, can we tie? Because I tell you what, both are fucking badass.
I feel like I'm going to choose the Alice Cooper one because I feel like at some point at that frat party that I'm just going to be like, I got to get the hell out of here. Yeah. This is getting out of hand.
Well, I'll put it this way. The Alice Cooper moment is the only one I remember.
Okay, well, there you go.
I got to go with that one.
There you go.
So,
yeah, if you have a choice between the Alice Cooper party or the Untouchables party,
yeah,
the Smart People party or the Lunkhead party.
Right.
All right,
moving on. Of course, them Lunkhead parties are a fucking blast.
They are fun.
Oh, my God.
They are fun. You usually don't remember them.
Well.
Yeah.
So the artist responsible for this record that I have in my mystery box is quoted as saying about it that it's, quote, the amateur singer, the amateur piano player, the funk-free boy, and his little songs.
Jeez.
A self-deprecating review of probably one of his best albums. This is Todd Rundgren.
Oh!
And the Ballad of Todd Rundgren, which is his second solo album. Which has not been on the show before.
Well, he's
check
not
out
very
that cover.
Funky. He doesn't have a lot of funk in
him. He calls himself funk-free.
He's relatively funk-free.
Unlike the Untouchables, he is funk-free.
Right.
So there it is. And Todd, welcome back to the Shabby Road, Todd Rundgren. It's been a while since he's been on
while.
There. Yep. This is check out the album cover there, AD. What can you describe the album cover of Runt, the Ballad of Todd Rundgren?
Todd Rundgren, obviously, or apparently, I should say, sitting with his back to the camera on a piano bench, playing a grand piano with the lid open, sort of in a dark room. It's kind of a very
dark blue,
very
shades there.
Sort of maybe the implication of maybe only the light from the motel room window,
perhaps,
you know, is just shining the street light through there. So.
Kenny Rogers Roaster's chicken.
Around his neck, hanging from the ceiling, is a hangman's noose.
That's right.
It's not tight.
No. It's just sort of around his neck, so at any moment, he's just going to jump off that piano bench. And
yeah.
End it all. So a self-deprecating, and it's tongue-in-cheek there because of his penchant for writing the slow ballad stuff. But we're going to play a rocker off here called Bleeding, which doesn't sound like a rocker on this record, but it is. And it's kind of confusing what this album is actually called. I mean, it's a Todd Rundgren solo album, so let's just call it that. At the time, he was trying to make Runt a band, so on the label it says the name of the band is Runt. The name of the album is The Ballad of Todd Rundgren.
Right.
But let's just say it's the Todd Rundgren
album. You are talking about the nonsensical ravings of a lunatic mind.
Absolutely right? We are, Sally.
Well, you know how you can fix that.
How?
NameOnAnything.com.
That's right.
Help
just
you
in
sort
case.
That out.
Yes, just in case. Labels on your formaldehyde jars.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Critically acclaimed album, but doomed. Anything that can go wrong did go wrong, except for the music on this record. This is probably one of Todd's most consistent records to me. I mean, it's the early period, the good stuff, the golden yells.
Yeah.
With Todd Rundgren. And this is a very consistent record. Because as we move forward in, we get Something Anything, which is probably the Start Here record. But a double record, and you know what the curse of double records are. They're oftentimes inconsistent.
Should have made it a great single album. You
know? Yeah, and then followed by my favorite, Wizard of True Star, which is
brilliant.
It's a mind fuck, but that record's great. And then after that, that's pretty much where anything consistent is gone from Todd's catalog.
I would agree with you on that.
You know, so this is album number two, and I think it's just great from beginning to end, top to bottom there. And so he's coming off a modest hit record, the debut Runt album, with it's got a top 20 hit, and We Gotta Get You a Woman, and AD, I owe you an apology. I didn't realize, I corrected you thinking that single, We Gotta Get You a Woman, was not that big of a hit. You said it was. I said, I don't think it was. Top 20 hit, so you're right, I'm wrong.
Well, it wasn't a big hit for Black Oak, Arkansas. We gotta get you a Walmart. Nah. They did a cover of that. It didn't go so well.
No. I would love to hear Jim Dandy's
thing. On that, yes. On those grounds, yes. You're correct.
How does it go?
We gotta get you a Walmart. Nah.
I thought you were going to apologize for not getting him a woman.
Oh, sorry for not getting you a woman.
Don't you worry, I got me a Walmart.
I only had $8 in my wallet. I got you two. I got you two from down in this neighborhood.
I tell you, you can get a woman from where I come from for $8. Yeah.
$8. So, Walmart. So the label, of course, coming off of the success of Black Oak Arkansas's cover of We Gotta Get You a Woman, the label had some high hopes for this sophomore release, but its lead single off the record, Be Nice to Me, which is a great song, stalled at number 70 on the charts. And once that first single bombs, AD, those dudes that work for the label that try to push the next single it's an uphill climb.
And it's like a horse race on a muddy track and you're slow out of the gate. You got a lot of catching up to do, you know?
So the second single bombs. And then the third single, well, here's what happened with that. A manufacturing error printed the A side as the B side and vice versa. B side is the A side. And the guys at the label were so pissed. Bearsville is the label.
Yeah, of course.
Distributed through Ampex Records. But the guys at Bearsville were so pissed that they threw those fucking records away. The guy is quoted as saying, like one of the radio promotions guys quoted as saying that the head of the Bearsville took that record and spun it like a frisbee against the wall when he first discovered.
Now, we just addressed that, Ampex.
We did.
Subsidiary.
We did, thing. And I have a little more insight into it because I have this Todd Rundgren book, and it talks about Ampex Records. And,
yeah.
And basically, well, I mean, it talks about it in the sense that it was everything, according to Bearsville, everything that Ampex did was half-assed.
And it was an experiment. They weren't in the business of doing that.
Correct. And they didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah.
And they folded basically overnight, and that was the other thing that led to this album. The Ampex was their distribution channel.
Yeah.
So Bearsville still kind of was the label, and they were in charge of pushing the record, but they had no distribution because Ampex, 3-4 months after the release of this album, folds. And it's like, well, that's enough of that. And so this album only sells 15,000 units, that's
Jesus.
It. I mean, it's like 35,000 units less than the previous album, which aren't huge numbers, but it was a growing artist that obviously you want to see growth in the next album. But no luck.
No, man. Yeah, he did have some bum luck.
And so Bearsville goes to Warner Brothers, and they become their distribution channel, and things begin to take shape on the next album. Interesting little thing they said, too, like people kept asking about where's this Todd's first two albums, we can't find them in the stores. And the deal was that they were so caught up in pressing Something Anything, because Something Anything has Hello, It's Me on it. It's a huge hit record. It's a gold record, and it's a double record. And so they're pressing those. And for a long time, these first two Todd Rundgren records were hard to find because there weren't a lot out there. They didn't sell a lot. A lot of them were returned or whatever. And so very interesting. And then there was some story about Todd Rundgren himself took master tapes to someone behind the label's back or something.
And said, make me some records.
It intimated that it was Todd maybe rumored to have been the guy that bootlegged his own record. Just like, give me fucking $50,000 and you can bootleg this all you want because I'm not making any money.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, very, very strange. So all of this acclaim comes in. I mean, Patti Smith writes this big, long article in Rolling Stone about this record and just lauding this fantastic new... And she was a huge Todd Rundgren fan, Patti Smith.
Cool.
When it came out. And so the song we're going to hear, we've got Tony Sales on bass.
Oh, come on.
And a guy named Norman Stewart on drums. Also on this is Tony Sales' brother, Hunt Sales, playing drums on a song called Parole. So this is before Todd was playing every instrument, where he started to do on the next album, Something Anything. He starts playing, and not all of that, but he's still kind of he's not very confident on drums yet, so he's got his rhythm section with him.
You know what? Honestly, makes for a better record.
It feels like a band, and I think that's, in a way, what it has over Something Anything, and maybe even to a degree over A Wizard, A True Star, where it feels bandy.
A Wizard, A True Star is a brilliant record, but it's a brilliant project record.
Yeah.
It's an obvious channel, vehicle, thing.
It's a guy.
For Todd. It's a showcase, and that's...
The wunderkind, the genius, the smart people guy.
In that capacity.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'd want to see him do it live, because he probably couldn't.
No.
So...
No, and he's not a bad drummer or bass player and multi-instrumental guy. It's just that what you lose, and you'll hear it on this track, where there's a real vibe between the people in the band.
Yeah.
You know? And obviously it's a bad record in terms of release, great record critically, but don't cry for me, Rundgren, Ina. Because during that year...
Toddy Tina.
Todd is producing a little record called Straight Up for a band called Badfinger.
Oh, fuck's sake.
And the album has the hit Day After Day, which is a great song.
Cha-ching.
The album's production was initially started by George Harrison.
George Harrison.
But he bailed as his attention was taken away from...
A hash pipe. There was a bowl of hash.
Certainly a giant hash pipe, and everything going on in Bangladesh with Ravi Shankar. So yeah, concert absolutely. For Bangladesh. Hey, Badfinger, I'll see you later then.
I've got to hook it to smoke with Maharishi.
Indeed. So Todd Rundgren fuming at George Harrison because...
Bad George Harrison.
George Harrison takes credit for co-producing the record, and Todd's like, he wasn't there. I did it. Now, George did do the initial sessions at Abbey Road or whatever it was, but Todd gets these tapes.
A weird He's name for make... studio.
Right, they forgot the S, H. And so Todd gets these tapes, and he's got to piece this all together, and he makes some changes. He re-records parts and stuff, and he was just fuming at Harrison for daring to put his name on that. It's like, I did the fucking record in Todd's arrogant style, you know, self-deprecating on one hand and then completely arrogant on the other.
He's lucky he didn't get himself murdered. Them Beatles have a mean streak.
George Harrison, right? I believe, has been involved in several murders.
I think the most murdery of all the Beatles, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think you had him using a Molotov cocktail and a chainsaw in the same murder one time.
Perhaps, yes.
So there we go. Let's drop the needle on this. It's side one, track 3AD from the album. Call it what you want. I call it a Todd Rundgren solo album, and the album called Runt, The Ballad of Todd Rundgren. Bearsville, distributed by the ill-fated Ampex Records in June of 1971. Here it is. Check it out. Bleeding.
Gun.
Yeah, you can feel that that's more of a band effort, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It feels more organic.
It was very James Gang-y.
It was.
Kind of got a James Gang vibe there.
You're right. You're right.
Not only the vocal, but the style of, you know, the obviously cowbell in the background, but, you know, James Gang would put percussion in the background. But
yeah,
even the sort of the country-ish guitar lines that are being played all through there. Mm-hmm. Very
yeah. Todd rips really guitar on the rockers on this album. There's another one called Parole, and that's with both Sales Brothers as the rhythm section there. And he's just shredding on that one.
Yeah, that was a great little number.
I thought
this
was the better song. I've always liked the hook in it. I'm a big Todd Rundgren fan. I love that stuff. I could listen to that stuff and listen to these records, and sometimes I'll just get on a kick and listen to it for like hours on end.
Yeah.
Because he'll go into that more of the ballads on here are very Laura Nero. He was so into Laura Nero. They sort of take that.
I was not aware of that.
Oh, God. Yeah. Todd Rundgren is huge Laura Nero fan. And Carole King. Those were the two. Oh, those were the two. He patterned his songwriting after them.
Oh, for
and especially in the ballad thing. So, yeah, great stuff. That's the Runt Ballad of Todd Rundgren album, 1971. And Ampex Records.
Ampex Records and tapes.
Yeah, the short-lived. What you got, AD?
Well, I got two choices. I got a cut from 1968, which is kind of in the same time frame. Or we can jump out on a limb.
It's going against Todd Rundgren on a partying level. So remember, that's our thing.
Oh, okay.
Would you rather party down?
Come on, play that funky music, white boy.
Oh, well, this would be interesting. Okay. Well, how about this? I'll stay in 19. We'll keep the time frame similar. 1968.
Right on.
Okay. I'll let that Verve Records.
All right.
Just gonna say that right now, Ryan. We've had a lot of bands on this show with some great names. We've also had some bands on this show with some not so great names.
Oh God.
Some perhaps offensive, like Battered Wives or Teenage Head. Right. We've had some bands that who have a name or two that are a bit bizarre, like Toe Fat or Frumpy or Horse Lips, right?
Baby comes to mind.
We've had some bands who've got some flat out fucking funny names like Airbag.
Airbag was a classic, yes.
Well, Ryan, Liz, our friends listening out there, I've got one tonight that will make one of those lists for sure. From Boston, Massachusetts, I brought Fluff.
Oh, Jesus.
Spelled P-H-L-U-P-H.
Oh, come
fluff.
On.
Here you go. Have some fluff, Ryan.
Cool cover.
We are a classy bunch.
We are a classy bunch. This is their one and only album, Fluff by Fluff.
I wonder why.
I'll spell that again. P-H-L-U-P-H. Verve Records, 1968. This is from the Mott Collection.
Okay. And look at this Poindexter here.
Right? These guys, okay, what's not to like about it? I don't know what took me so long to play this record. I played it a couple of times, two, three times in the past since I got it, and I loved it. But you know what I do? I don't want them sitting around, so I end up putting them back in my shelves. And there's so many, it's hard to file through them like that. So you just, it gets lost in the...
Did you have a hard time pairing Fluff with something else?
No, I just, you know...
For your mystery box?
No, I just happened to pull it out. You know, sometimes I'll just grab randomly 10 records and go through those. And if like two or three or none interest me, whatever, I'll pull them out. And those are sort of my prospects for the show, right?
This guy's face... Just says, I'm sorry about our band name, guys.
I'm in Fluff, dude. That says it all. I'm in Fluff, dude.
I'm in Fluff,
what's
and I'm sorry.
What's the name of your band? Fluff.
Fluff. Oh, F-L-U. No, yeah, we use P-H.
Yeah, he's in the back of an Uber going, so you're in a band? Yeah, what's the name of the band?
damn
Fluff.
It.
It's Fluff.
It's
Fluff?
It's Led Zeppelin.
F-L-U-F-F? That's pretty cool. No, it's P-H-L-U-P.
Yeah, they would never make it in the internet age.
No.
But this is their one and done. This was their one and out.
It looks even worse on the label where you could just read it, because they got a kind of a cool logo.
Right, right, right.
But then if you just see it here, you're like, what does that even say? Fluff. P-H.
They're fat.
L-U-P-H.
So it says on the back of the album's jacket they were the first band from Boston to be recorded by a major label.
So, I find that rather difficult.
Says so right on the back
believe.
Of the check. And now, My next note was, some may argue.
Yes.
Now, as did I, Ryan.
Okay.
Okay, which prompted more research? And I'm thinking to myself, okay.
Going down a rabbit hole.
Here we go. What about the Standells? I love that dirty water. Okay. Oh, Boston, yo, my home, right?
Okay.
1967, it came out.
Okay, a little bit before, you said 68 on this record, yeah?
Here's the deal with that. Okay. The Standells, the band was actually from L.A. and had never even stepped foot in Boston.
Oh.
When wow. that song was written and released and recorded. The song was written by record producer from Tower Records, a guy named Ed Cobb, that Dirty Water song,
mm-hmm.
after a trip to Boston where he was actually robbed on a bridge over the Charles River.
Ah.
So.
Interesting side note.
Right.
A track on my Todd Rundgren record, Boat on the Charles, written about that river in Boston.
No kidding. Wow. Mm-hmm. How very serendipitous. Wow. So, yeah. So. These guys claim they were the first major label band to be recorded from Boston. So says they.
Okay.
Right?
Well, unless someone can prove us wrong, okay. Let's just go with that.
Right. So, but now, sadly, dude, this record is great. It's a great, great album.
Are we psychedelic? Listen, what are we doing?
In the Mott collection, there are so many of these old, like the American Dream, bands yeah. like that, these great bands from that era that were so fantastic from the Mott collection. I'm still discovering them and just delighting in
That's
them.
That's an amazing collection you got.
This is one of those records, man. This is one of those fucking records. And of course,
I mean, I steal one out of here every time we come down. I shouldn't have said that out loud. Is this mic on?
Yeah. Man, my headphones are off anyway. I've never heard a word you said in 143 shows.
I'll see you later, AD. My shirt looks like a big square.
But I mean obviously they never left Boston commercially speaking. They, you know, it was one yeah. and done. But so what is Fluff, you may ask?
A terrible band name. That's my answer.
Well, again, I go to the back of the album jacket and it says, and I quote, this is a direct quote from the back of the album jacket. It says, "Fluff is a smile at a hanging. The sound of children running in terror. The kiss of escape. A kind word in France. The experience of a river. The rub of silken thighs on a subway. The what? Career of virginity. A siren wailing in a schoolyard."
What does Dude, any of that mean?
Here's the deal. This record, it's got that garagey, happy... But it's there's some heavy shit. There's mm-hmm. a little bit of flower powery shit in there, okay. which I fucking adore that shit. I love Cups and Cakes, if you know what I'm saying.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I love that style. But they don't get too flowery. It's all very guitar-driven, keyboard-driven.
Fuzzy guitar?
Rock, yeah. The guitars are lines are cool. There's that heavy, bah, 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 heavy keyboard sound on some
what
of the
keyboard
songs.
Keyboard? Have we got an organ or
like
a Farfisa?
Like the old Farfisa sound, all you know, right. the Boston-y okay. sound. But again, it's not every song, so they balance it out great. But it always feels kind of light and cool and yeah, yeah, yeah. Dude, lyrically, this shit is so dark. That's what all this, what is Fluff? Dude, again, a smile at a hanging, you know? I mean, the lyrics are so fucking dark. So the song I chose is a song called Girl in Tears. It's not the heaviest or hardest song. It's not the most exciting song on this record, but it is a great sort of insight on what this band is about. It's basically about a girl who's made some really serious mistakes in life, made some bad choices, you know, mm. and sort of, hey, you know what, honey, live with it. You know, here's what you did, and here's what happened. Now look
You've
at you.
You've made your bed, now lie in it.
Yep, girl in tears. And listen carefully to the lyrics in this. I'm not going to go into, you know, quoting them, but put some headphones on if you're driving. Turn off the lights. Close your eyes.
turn off the
yeah,
headlights?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have a drink.
You know, pour yourself a whiskey, some sipping whiskey.
Yeah.
And
that's great advice.
Yeah, put the seat back and really listen to the lyrics on this one.
Put on autopilot.
It's pretty dark. And I love this record. I love this record. It's a Mott. Thank you. For this, you know? Oh, and by the way, I looked it up because it's not much information on these guys at all. So I happened to hit Discogs. Boom. You know what this record's worth average?
What?
About $140.
Wow.
Whoops.
Yeah. Crazy,
wow,
right?
I just stuck under my shirt.
That one,
yeah.
Home.
Well, that's you're $140 richer, my friend.
Yeah.
Enjoy that record. But no, it's
actually up on eBay right now.
I'm Fluff. Fluff from their one and only self-titled record, PHLUPH. Let's play Girl in Tears. This song's written by John Pell. The album's produced by Dan Elliott. Came out on Verve in 68. Check it out. Great, great song, Girl in Tears.
Of that record.
Psychotic little song. The album is great. This is, again, this song doesn't represent the band musically. This is one of their more spacey, cups and cakesy thing. But the lyrics were so dark. Again, if you
Cups and Cakes, Spinal Tap. Right?
Yeah, but very dark. I mean, it's very, very, you feel bad for the chick in the song, subject of the song. But it's one of those tunes. And I thought, you know, I could have probably got one heavier, more guitar-y, but I don't know. Something compelled me. I kept going back to this song, I don't know why. There's some seriously rock and garagey numbers on this.
Okay.
That are really cool.
Well, you have to bring them back and play some of that then.
Yeah. Oh, I will. You'll see more Fluff from me, buddy.
That was another one of his movies.
You'll see some more Fluff from me, buddy.
You know what I had for a mustache? A bunch of Fluff.
Fluff.
Okay. Moving on?
Moving on, please, yes.
Are we safe to move on?
You bail me out of this quick.
I've got something that lines up with that. Of course, I got my smart people. The question is, do we go to a Fluff psychedelic party, or are we hanging out at Todd Rundgren's studio? What's Todd Rundgren's not really known as a big party guy.
I can see him walking around like pretentious and just like
I think we're all hanging out with
Fluff.
I'd
be tripping with Fluff.
Even though they were kind of nerdy looking, but
I bet they trip balls. Guarantee they had the good shit.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think we're all in agreement there.
I'd go fluff. Yeah. Full fluff on this.
All right. Well,
I was strung out on heroin.
As we're moving on, I'm not sure if you're a big fan of this stuff, AD, but it's going to tie in nicely to what you just played. It's more late 60s psychedelia. And it's a band that we've not played on the show, but we have certainly played more than once. The main guy, one of the main guys in the band. And I'm talking about the Velvet Underground.
Oh,
is coming into Shabby Road for the first time. Welcome.
Yes. My goodness.
And there they are. And I brought their self-titled album. It's actually the third album in their queue. The first album, of course, is the famous one with the banana.
Manor.
There's the Velvet Underground and Nico. And second album is White Light, White Heat. This is their third album.
Is this a reissue?
It is, yes. And it was gifted to me by Maureen and Aline.
Oh, that's awesome.
Super nice. Super nice people. So thank you guys very much. And we've been talking a lot about the Velvet Underground because Aline's a big fan. As a matter of fact, I'm playing I'm Set Free because that's one of her favorite songs on the record.
Now,
I like Pale Blue Eyes.
Just turned 17 years old, and she is like really hip. Beyond her years, musically speaking, she
absolutely
gets the old shit, the real deep, heavy stuff that
right.
you wouldn't expect a girl who literally was 16, what, a week ago?
Yeah, which is
her
it's
to get.
Similar to you and I, because if you think about even your era of music that you grew up in, of course, you liked your Alice Cooper when Alice Cooper was coming out. But then didn't you like the Temptations
and the old stuff
and
Chuck
didn't you
Berry
like the Four
the
Tops
Cab Calloways and the
and
Louis
the Cab
Armstrongs.
Calloways.
Yeah.
And I was similar too, like growing up in the '80s, I was listening to 60s and 70s music as well. So yeah.
For her, she gets it. That's a real
well,
cool
it's
thing.
A really yeah. important thing, like to right. to learn history of music and learn where things come from to really absorb them like
yeah.
that. So
well, there's nothing like experimenting.
Okay, Sally, that's not the experimenting we're talking about. From the sound of that
He's
voice over there.
No
so, third album from Velvet Underground, and the first without their founding member, John Cale.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So John Cale was that sort of experimental, wacky...
He became a hippie diet later on in the 2000s.
He became a what? A hippie what?
A hippie diet.
Oh, he did. Oh, yeah. John Cale diet, yes.
That's the kale.
Have you ever had John Cale chips?
Oh, yeah.
Delicious.
I only have kale.
Deep fried.
Deep fried.
Only kale.
Yes. So Lou Reed... And John Cale fought over the direction of the band, with Cale wanting to do more experimental stuff like recording the next album with the guitar amps underwater.
Okay.
Dude.
People will die, John Cale. People will die.
You could put the speaker cabinet under there, maybe, but what about the head?
I don't know about electricity and water.
I'm thinking
I don't
that
know.
Doesn't mix.
Hey Lou,
you go be the engineer.
Lou,
no, you go be the engineer.
Lou, jump down in there and turn my treble up about one little sconce, will you?
Yeah, right.
Experiment with that.
Just a skosh.
A skosh. I invented a new word of sconce. So they were at... Loggerheads, is that the good word for it? I don't know.
I'd say dunderheads.
Dunderheads.
The
two of them, well, obviously all of them doing all kinds of amphetamines
right.
and whatever
yeah.
else was floating around Andy Warhol's place. So Reed wanted to move away. Reed wanted to move away from it. So Lou Reed issues this ultimatum to the other musicians in the band and saying basically it's either him or me. And
what a bitch.
He was
yeah,
such a bitch.
He could be a little bitch. And the band went along with Lou Reed's plan, ousting John Cale, sadly, much to the chagrin of the other members of the band. They were like, oh, man,
yeah.
we don't want to do this. But they said, you know what? This third record, without John Cale was a fun experience. There wasn't any drama, probably because Lou was finally like, okay, now we don't have to deal with John Cale wanting to play his viola through my Marshall stack or whatever.
Cale is now residing in the produce section at Sprouts.
He is, yes. Yeah. He's on sale, actually.
You can find Cale.
Organic, three for $5. Okay, so they...
I'm going to use that joke again, probably.
Let's keep going. Yeah. So they replaced him with Doug Yule on bass. What you got for Doug Yule?
Well, you'll be telling me in a minute, won't you?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bass player Doug Yule. And they would do two records with this lineup. They do this one and the follow-up called Loaded. Now, speaking of Velvet Underground, they did four records proper, okay? They got the Banana
yeah.
one with Nico, who's a mess altogether. Boy. We'll talk about her in a second.
Yeah, she's fun.
White Light, White Heat. We got this self-titled one, which is more acoustic-y
right.
in nature. And Loaded, which is arguably the Start Here record in a way, because it's like, it's got Sweet Jane, it's got Rock and Roll, the song that Jane's Addiction covered, and,
sure.
and many others. So it's interesting, you know, that record is more accessible. But this third one is my favorite. I think it's the most consistent,
really?
Save for one song that's a little wild. You know, they still have to be the Velvet Underground-y, you know, like how they do. Even without John Cale, you know, they kind of still did one sort of spoken word business in there on side two. But it's like the most consistent. Although the first record with Nico on it, that's a pretty good record, too. It's more poppy, actually.
This is the one I'm least familiar with. And I'm not, you know, you're the Velvet Underground guy, much more so than I am.
The Lou Reed guy,
yeah,
the Velvet Underground
and
guy.
And I don't not dig him. I'm not that totally into him. And this is, I'm familiar with Candy Says. I know what that's all about, but not much.
And that
on this
was
record.
Sung by Doug Yule, Candy Says. And also the drummer, I don't have her name. I didn't write her name down, but it's a. Well, Liz, look up the girl's name.
Say Ringo.
Ringo, Ringette. She's a girl.
Ringette.
She sings the last song on here, so she gets her first vocal. So Lou was good about like you should sing this because your voice is better for it. You should sing this because your voice is better than. Of course, you know, most singers are better than Lou Reed.
Yeah, get Jim Dandy in there.
Jim Dandy, you sing this one. So Andy Warhol, of course, is largely responsible for the Velvet Underground.
Tucker.
I'm sorry?
Mo Tucker.
That's right.
Maureen.
Amazing, groundbreaking drummer. Very tribal. Very cool. Just a big part of the sound, Maureen Tucker. So once Andy Warhol is introduced to the band, he incorporates them into a traveling multimedia show called The Exploding Plastic Inevitable.
Oh, God, I remember reading about that. Yeah. How about that? That was full on. He had like male stripper erotic
it was
shit going on.
Whatever was weird.
Right? Yeah.
He was throwing it all in there.
Yeah.
And so the Velvets would play, and then there'd be 8mm films that Andy shot of God knows what was going on in there.
Live people coming up on stage.
Right, yeah. And in 66, so they go into the studio and record the first album. That's the one with Nico, who was only there for one album. And then she disappears and goes and does a solo album with John Cale that helped her with that. And then she goes on to make some more records, and she has a weird death, AD.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I know this is right up your alley. She had tons of problems with drugs, was on heroin and all the way up until the end. And this is going into the 80s now. She has her son living with her, who's grown by this point. And I guess Nico decides that she's getting on her bike. She's riding downtown.
Living in France. Yeah.
In France at the time. She needs to go down the hill on her bike and buy some weed.
Yep.
So it's time for weed. Nico needs her weed. So she's like, all right, I'll be right back. I'm going to buy some weed. And she rides her bike down, and apparently she has a heart attack because she had just kicked heroin. She's now on methadone. And, you know, that's the thing that messes you up. Once you get off something like that, you know, sometimes your body sort of rejects the fact you don't have that in your system.
Oh, you're getting punished.
So something happens, and she crashes her bike and hits her head, and then I guess the people that came up on her to help her, she was unresponsive. And they misdiagnosed her as having heat stroke, and so they didn't really treat her for what was really going on, and she ended up passing away from it.
Jesus.
Yeah, wow. So crazy, crazy death there. So they released that record, 66, 67's White Light, White Heat, which is a little too out there for me. I like the song, White Light. I like a couple,
great song.
Couple of songs are great on that record, but it's just too much noise rock for me.
Again, I think of Velvet Underground's greatest hits album, it would be... I'm not usually into a greatest hits thing, but for a band like that, you know, I think I would probably go, I'll take their greatest hits. Some of the other stuff.
No,
I think for the history of the band, yes, you got to have the original album. Some people are cringing right now as I say that.
Yeah, save for White Light, White Heat, I think the other three are well worth owning because, like, this album is very consistent. Loaded's pretty consistent. The first album's pretty consistent.
Yeah.
Let's check it out. This is really great stuff. I love these guys. You could definitely hear how this is very influential. There's nothing like this in 1968, really, in terms of the pounding drums and the way things are put together. There's not a lot like this, and because it's somewhat trendy and hip to like the Velvet Underground, you know, a lot of those 90s bands hit it. In the 80s and 90s, they were influential on a lot of those. U2 comes to mind. Like, I listen to this and I go, key of D, Lou Reed's banging on a key of D, on a D chord, and you got a tribal drum, and I go, this is With or Without You by U2.
Right.
But it's way better. You know, it's more interesting.
You're right, because it's not U2.
Well, that's for starters,
that's
yes.
A good start right there.
So let's drop the needle on this.
It's
so
from.
From March of 1969 on MGM Records, this is I'm Set Free from the self-titled Velvet Underground record.
Yesterday's past.
Ah, yes, from March of 1969. That's the Velvet Underground with I'm Set Free from their self-titled album. I love the we were just talking about it, and the thing I like about them is that it's just a dude, a guitar, and a very simple thing. There's a purity about this record that I've always been attracted to.
There is, and that's usually what I'm attracted to as well. I mean, the drum sound is horrible. The tones on this record are awful. The harmonies are out of time. They're out of tune.
Yes.
I'm not sure if any of the strings on the entire album are in the same pitch, even the same time zone as that goes. So that being said, I get that because there are some bands that are so horrible in exactly the same way that I love, and people go, why do you like that? And they don't get it, and I go, you don't get
it. Yeah, it's weird because they're all kind of bad together.
Right, and why why haven't the Velvet Underground grabbed me in that same way? I don't know, and isn't that the magic of music? Isn't that the mystery of the fucking whole thing?
There is,
because by
it
all
is
standards, by all the A.D. Adams standards, I should go, it's rebellious, it's heroin-y, it's all, you
heroin-y.
Know, all that. That's an adverb, it's a participle, a dangling participle.
I think.
I believe.
Speaking of that.
On your nose, Ryan, go like this.
Okay,
yeah,
got
go like
it.
That. Okay, got it. So, but you know what I'm saying? It's, I should love it.
I get that it's probably very divisive for everyone that just listened to that and like, I don't get it at all. Like, turn that horse shit off. I don't know what it is about it. I really can't put my finger out other than it's so pure and it seems so simple. And there isn't anything getting in the way of what that is. It's just people, let's put some mics on this band and then see what happens.
I think the key with me is, okay, I think is that, that in itself, that by itself, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But then the fact that Lou Reed thinks he believes himself a genius throughout all
this. He's in the smart people factory box.
Right. And so, see, that's the part I don't buy because, like, you know, Reed,
he's very well
read.
You're
not a genius. Yeah. And he's playing shitty music, but which would be great without the
Maybe
pretension
that's the
of I'm great.
Yeah.
I wish he had the balls. If he was that smart, he would go, we're horrible.
But do you
check
think
us
that,
out.
Do you think that Lou Reed actually thought he was that great? Or do you think
yes.
Lou Reed was putting on airs?
I think he thought he was.
I think he was putting on airs.
Okay, well, that's why you get it and I don't.
Yeah. I think Lou
Reed
was very insecure.
He would chastise audiences. Is that an act?
I don't know what. He was a complicated man. It's the old adage, and I forget who said it because I read it today doing my research. Someone said that maybe only 3,000 people ever bought a Velvet Underground record back in the day, but every one of those motherfuckers started a garage band.
You know who said that?
Who?
Lou Reed. I believe.
No.
Yeah.
But it's true. I mean, it makes it accessible. I think it makes it sort of like that, hey, it's not just this big produced,
no, I get it.
Polished thing. You can make a record like this.
I totally get that. And you know, it kind of bums me out that I don't dig them as much.
You should borrow this record.
I want to like them.
You should borrow this record.
I'll borrow that record.
I think it's pretty... It's not loaded. It's the more accessible one, but this is a very consistent one.
All right, I'll trade you that one for Rogues Gallery. Meet you next week.
Okay.
Not like permanent forever.
Okay. No, I'm down. I'm down.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That almost went wrong.
Yeah. Oh, you sure? Geez.
Yeah.
It's Rogues Gallery's been under my shirt for like 45 minutes.
Oh, it's warped and sweaty right now.
Yeah, it's a little smelly.
It smells like French fries.
It's potatoes because I'm Irish.
Oh, no.
How dare you? It smells like whiskey and French fries.
It smells like Jameson and
I'm so racy.
How dare you?
I'm so
racist.
Racy.
I'm out of here. White privilege. You with your white privilege. All right, go for it, AD. What you got next?
I got nothing after that. As a matter of fact, I got something so fucking heavy it's going to rot your tater.
Okay. Oh, easy now. Come on.
All right.
Now
you're a jerk. You know that?
That's right, Sally.
No, Liz. Now, remind me. This band, I believe you turned me onto this band. Am I wrong? Cadaver?
Yes, I did.
Cadaver.
Cadavar?
Cadaver.
Right?
Cadavar.
And you bought me this one and that Motor Sister album, right?
Yeah.
Way back in the day. And this is like, dude, this is like total, like, German stoner metal. It's just so great. It's heavy, it's Sabbath-y, it's Zeppelin-y, it's Wolf Mother-y,
yes.
And Liz. And so she just randomly bought these records. I'd not heard of them.
Yeah.
You know? And all of a sudden she goes, hey, check this out. Boom. And she brings Cadaver. I'm like, what the fuck? She goes, I think you'd like this. And then and that Motor Scooter, what was that? Ian, dude from Anthrax.
Scott Ian.
And his what? Hit his fucking wife, Janine.
Yeah, oh, that. Oh,
what is it? Wasn't it Meatloaf's daughter or something?
Yeah. Yes.
Right?
Yeah. She's Meatloaf's daughter.
Yes.
I believe so. But yeah. God almighty.
That sounds like an album.
So I wasn't.
Meatloaf's daughter.
So I'd not heard of them. And Liz just kind of, hey, I think you'd like them. So, and she brought the first Cadaver album. And it was fucking badass,
yeah.
Right? I mean, it's freaking great, man. And that goes in with other bands like that, like Wolf Mother.
Mm-hmm.
Like current bands. The Sword.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Sword's good.
So those are like current sort of death metal, stoner metal.
Yeah, and, Sabbath.
And, dude, yeah, and I love stoner metal, like biker metal, like the Rods. You know, band, fucking cool bands like that. They're just like...
What was that awful... Was that the Rod? No, it wasn't the Rods. You played another biker metal band recently that it was like an appalling mix. You think that
good.
Velvet Underground's bad?
Yeah.
Mixed.
But they're not walking around like they're geniuses hanging with fucking like artists. They're hanging with whores at a biker bar.
That is more, it's more fun to be dumb.
Right? Yeah. I think so. Yes. I think we're proving that here tonight. Uh-huh. And so... So anyway, so then I believe you bought me their second album as well.
Yes,
am I wrong?
I did.
Well, that's what I brought because they haven't been played
since. The second
since,
album
like,
by who?
Cadaver.
Cadaver. Okay.
Boom.
Abracadaver.
It's called Abracadaver.
Yes.
Is it really?
Yes.
Oh,
wow.
It's Abracadaver, Ryan. Wow, really? You just said that?
It's a Simpsons reference.
Oh, no way.
Of course, everything I say is the Simpsons.
But I mean, okay, so listen. Here's the deal. Ryan, check these guys out. Look at this.
This is the second album, okay?
And it is, listen, it's...
Epic beards.
This is not music you sit down and listen to in headphones and go, oh, the brilliance, you know? And listen to the panning. They recorded this album live, literally, including vocals. Except for, like, there was only three songs I think they redid and overdubbed vocal tracks. So this is three dudes... playing live in a studio, and it's again.
Are they rocking balls?
They're rocking balls,
yeah.
Dude. It's three chords and the heavy metal truth. It's not again. Do not listen to it in headphones. Do not sit down and settle in with this record. Clean the garage. Put this album on. Clean the garage. Crank up. Find the shittiest, loudest speakers. It doesn't matter if your speakers are good. Find the loudest speakers you can. Play this record through it. This is music to chop meat to. I'm telling you, this record...
This record... Cadaver.
I'm telling you.
Wow.
This album, episode 63, I found in my notes. Episode 63, I played them for the first time here. The album, episode was titled, You Stuck a Pickle in My Peanut Butter.
Wow.
But
classic.
I played the song off their 2012 debut, mm-hmm. self-titled debut, Debla. It's French for first time out, Debla. Right?
Is this the most recent Cadaver album?
No, this is their second album.
Okay, so they've got another
French
one since.
Blah, blah, right?
Oh, is that?
Yeah.
Dude. It sounds like you're doing a Dracula impersonation.
This came out in 2013. They put out another one, I think, in 2016, if I'm not mistaken. So they've got three out, but this is their second one.
I say something about the faces of the gentleman on the cover?
The bearded faces of the gentleman on the cover?
They're high.
There, hence the term stoner rock.
Yes.
How red are those German eyes?
Those are very dilated.
By the way,
pupils.
They are from Berlin, Germany. That's.
Oh, I love that tone.
Look how fucking high you are.
Which,
you're so high, you don't even know your pants are down. Woohoo! Woohoo!
I scored some hash down the street, down the Strasse. Would you care for a segment?
Yeah. It's good.
It's good, no?
So now, this band, again, three piece, two of the dudes' names are Christoph. Oh, Christoph. What, Christoph? Oh, look, we have the same name. Let's keep doing this. Hey, Christoph. What, Christoph? Oh, I can do this for hours. But so it's Christoph Lupus Lindemann.
That sounds like a disease.
He's this, right? Yeah. Well, it is, and I think that's why they call him that. Lead singer, guitar player, and occasional synth guy. The drummer, Christoph Tiger Bartelt, who also produced the record.
Oh.
And then, of course, Simon Dragon Bootsloop, who is the new guy. Now, he was replaced. Uh-oh. If you remember, I believe we got into Philip Mammut Lipitz, their old bass player, who actually played all but the last two tracks on this album. So they got the new guy in for the last two tracks. But the new guy got the credit on the album and his face on the cover. So that's all that matters.
There you go.
Ink, baby. His agent's going, get ink. I don't give a fuck what you do. Get ink. Yeah, but I only get to record two songs. You're going to be on the cover? Yeah. Get on the fucking cover.
I like that their manager is
all
from
of a sudden he's
New
from
Jersey.
New, yeah. Yeah, but what do I do? Hey, that accent isn't going to work with me, buddy.
So, and he's from the 20s.
Right. So here's
who's
the thing now.
I never heard this voice before.
So their first record did okay, but you know, that was a different record label. They now signed with, what is it? Signed with Nuclear Blast Records.
All right.
And it's like, they're more of a mail order thing than a physical distribution.
One of your films.
Oh, mail order, yes. Spelled May. Yeah. Yes.
Just move on.
You know what I have for mustache?
What?
Postage stamps. Oh. You know what I'm saying?
Elvis postage
yeah,
stamps, I hope.
Like a Fu Manchu. So
Liz is begging us to stop. All right, go on.
You too. So. Yeah, but so their new label and their third album is also on this Nuclear Blast label. But again, there's not a lot of physical distribution going on with them, so it's kind of weird. Bands like this are having issues. And their initial album came out, and it was the label was based out of New York, so they had physical copies coming out. I mean, to ship albums overseas, physical copies. Sort of in advance to put in record stores is kind of an expensive little gamble. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
it's good that, I mean, the Amazon's out there and Discogs and things like that, you know?
Yeah.
I guess that's where a lot of it, and they sell them at the shows.
But again, their new label's based in Germany. So even if they get them on Discogs or whatever, they still have to ship them overseas. And so it's more expensive. So I think it's a little harder to find a new Cadavar. Cadaver. So, Cadavar.
Cadaver.
Cadaver.
I like it. So, and, what are we playing off of
so,
here?
So, let's play. How about this? How about we play Doomsday Machine?
Track two, written by all three of the guys.
Yep, it's going to be side one, track two. Ryan.
Yes. Oh, time signature challenge.
Intro. The time signature challenge on the intro. Okay, I want you to talk to me about that. It's going to happen quick. It's only going to happen one time through. So
right at the top.
Yep, right at the top. Probably the first, 8 bars in, I believe.
Okay.
So let me know what you think time signature is on this one, my friend.
All right.
I
love this.
Cadaver from the Abra Cadaver album. let's drop the needle on Doomsday Machine.
We'll be right back.
Oh,
come on, right?
Those guys are great first. Let's get that out of the way first.
Cadaver.
Those guys are great.
Yeah. You know what that is? That's three motherfuckers in a room with their amps cranked playing live. That's essentially a live, no overdub album.
The panning.
For the most part.
Yeah, I mean, that's guitar on one speaker and the bass on the other speaker.
Ah, music could chop meat too, man.
Good stuff, though.
Yeah.
So, time signature challenge, AD. We have been, much debate has been going on since
It's been mass debating in here, yes.
Mass debating. I counted this in four. And
four,
I would imagine so many of the listeners also counted it all straight up in four. But
four what? Where's your pulse in four? Is it consistent through the entire song?
I ran into problems on a couple of things counting it straight up in four. At the top, it's definitely an eighth note feel. Mm-hmm. Or you can say, okay, if that's your pulse, if that's your quarter note, then the drummer's playing at half time, right? But really, it's 8/8/8.
At the top, it's 8/8 if you want to call it.
And
that
then out. Once they go into what feels like the sort of like halftimey thing, that's your quarter note pulse.
It becomes 4/4.
Yeah.
So you're counting it at the top of the song. You're counting eighth notes. 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then it goes into the 1, 2, 3, 4. So
that's
now you're counting quarter notes, which makes it feel halftime. Right. Now, you're absolutely right. It is technically all based in four. Mm-hmm. The cool part about the phrasing, though, on the intro, I counted it in eighth notes, and then when the main riff and the meat of the song came in, counted in quarter notes after that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did is I followed the guitar phrasing. It's funny, you, the guitar player, followed what the drummer was doing.
Yeah.
And me, the drummer, I followed what the guitar player was doing. How fucking funny is that?
That's messed up.
That's weird.
That's messed up. So, I was doing the pulse.
Right.
Like, where is the pulse? And,
yeah.
I want the path of least resistance.
Yeah, and what I felt was the guitar riff. And it just compelled me to count a 9/8/7/8 at the top. Now, technically...
And you're right.
And technically, you're right as well. How funny is that? Because music, as a perception, how fantastic is that magic? Right?
Yeah.
The
riff, actually, if you guys go back and listen to the top of that song, AD's right, where the guitar riff itself, count it 9, then 7, rather than 8/8. We end up in the same place.
But remember, the 8
is... But it's 9/7 in terms of where the riff really genuinely resets.
And the 8 is... Then when the main riff of the song comes in, it's... And that's when the quarter notes kick in.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So it's kind of cool. Well,
that's a great song, man.
It's great.
Great band.
From the Abracadabra album. How great is that? Liz, thank you for turning me on to them. I love this band. They're so pure rock and roll. And they're from Germany.
No, sir, not all.
Boys and Lena was in three of them.
They seem like they're high. They may be adventurous.
Why do I love our affirmation?
Everyone gone nuts? Who the hell do you think you are?
Who knows that drunk drop from? Who was that lady?
It had to have been drunk Judy Garland.
Please be Judy Garland. All right. Well, the mystery boxes, AD, are finally empty. And so here we are taking this plane back down to Earth again.
This one-winged plane.
We thank you guys very much for tuning in here to Shabby Road, episode 142 in the books already.
And look at us, three of us in the bag.
Keeping on here. And thank you guys for dropping by the website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, and clicking on that Amazon.com banner, doing all your shopping through Amazon. Sign up to be a Prime member. Mm-hmm. Buy a Cadaver record, for Christ's sake.
Yep.
Those guys are great. And buy whatever you want, kitchen sink. Comes to mind. Buy food. You never have to leave the house.
Really?
But go through our website first. We get a little kickback. We get to dip our carrot in Amazon's wake as you as you order away through there. And also leave us some iTunes reviews if you can. If you get a moment, just say, hey, love the show. And iTunes goes, hey, these guys have some traction. Maybe we'll put them in the what's hot category.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, there's a bunch of people listening to the show. And we're all here, one big community.
It's amazing how you sounded like a pretentious programmer who just really knows nothing until somebody's something. And they go, yeah, I discovered them.
I am a pretentious programmer.
Right?
Yeah. Well, Lou Reed and I have been talking.
Oh,
yes,
that guy.
He's teaching me how to be pretentious. Let's give a shout out to Liz Morgan, who's running the controls for
Liz
us tonight.
Liz Morgan! Woo, luscious Liz!
Awesome as always. Yes. Thank you, Liz. You're welcome. Did you have a favorite song tonight? Velvet Underground, maybe?
No.
Cadaver. Cadaver. She loves
it. I love Cadaver.
I do too.
And she also likes that band called Cadaver.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and hey, that's a stiff joke.
So, and she's brought with her Sal 5000.
How nice. The gift that keeps on sucking.
Oh. How jeez.
She turned sour. I think she's had some wine, if you know what I'm saying.
I think so.
Spodiody.
I think so. Well, AD, the mystery boxes are indeed empty. So, ladies and gentlemen, that means our long national nightmare is over. Now, to heal a nation, I hereby issue a full pardon to my co-host, AD Adams.
And let me just say to this nation, I apologize to everyone listening, and we got to scram out of this smoke-filled abyss before our lungs saw their way out of our ribs in protest. 10 minutes more of breathing this stuff, and we could legally change our names to Cheech and Chong. So until next time, I want to bid a blonde kazoo to my pal and co-host, Mr. Ryan McKay.
Well, thank you, sir. Yes. Still feeling 8-8, but 9-8. I got a 9.
9-7, you know. But seven. You could keep it, right? I mean, depending on where you're feeling the beat. And
those guys are so high. They're not.
A portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is fearlessly brought to you by those crazy bastards at nameonanything.com. Use the promo code SHABBY at checkout and save 10% on your order. Nameonanything.com.